Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about how the U.S. anti-terrorism fight is affecting Africa. And with us tonight is a regular panelist, Suleiman Mgula, who is joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and good evening to your listeners. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. And joining us from Nairobi is Isaac Ongiri. Isaac is a senior political reporter for the Daily Nation newspaper in Nairobi. Good evening, Isaac.
Good evening, Imboga.
How are you today?
I'm very fine.
That's good. Welcome to the show. As I said earlier on, we're going to be talking about how the U.S. anti-terrorism fight affects Africa. As our listeners may know, the war on terrorism in Africa did not begin on September 11th, 2001. It began much earlier in Sudan when Osama bin Laden operated there. And 3 years later, in 1998, Al-Qaeda cells blew up the American embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. But after the September 11th, U.S. focus on terrorism in Africa became more pronounced. Let us begin from there, although we have some background noise from Isaac. But your general observations on the change, or what impact, general impact you is there in Kenya, for instance, or East Africa as a whole, as a result of the fight against terrorism?
Pardon?
Are you there, Isaac?
I can hear you right now.
Yes, I can hear you better now. I was asking about the visible impact of the war on terrorism, especially since after September 11th.
Okay, the war on terrorism in East Africa has been intensified following quite a number of terror attacks targeting East African states. Kenya has been one of the victims of terror attacks in East Africa, but all the other East African countries, especially Tanzania and Uganda, have been attacked quite a number of times. Some of these attacks actually forced Kenya to decide and actually occupy or go into Somalia to try to deal with the attackers from right inside their own territory, the hub in Somalian territory. So war on terrorism in East Africa is something that has been intensified by the three East African states here.
I see. Are there some who even pointed out when Kenya went to intervene in Somalia that the Kenyan intervention actually may have increased the number of attacks on Kenyan homeland? Is that perception still among people?
That perception is actually there because, you know, when Kenya went into Somalia, we've got a lot of retaliatory attacks by the Al-Shabaab network in Somalia. You know, Kenya being one of the countries with quite a number of the Somali population, it has been a very difficult war because the Somali ethnicity in Kenya is quite large, and, you know, it has been very difficult to know who is actually participating in these activities. Mm-hmm. And you also know that Kenya is hosting quite one of the largest refugee camps in the world. The Dadaab refugee camp, which has actually turned into a hub for some of these terror groups who come in as refugees and end up committing terror attacks from within the Kenyan soil.
I see. Suleiman, you want to jump in with a general observation as things stand in the last 15 years as the fight against terrorism continues in Africa?
Actually, what we can say is that while America was able to react swiftly and was able to take a number of measures to ensure that the homeland is secured, on the other hand, the African countries, which we thought at first were working as a decoy to facilitate a 201, unfortunately turned out now to be the actual battlefield. Well, the space was widened on the American homeland, the gap widened on the African continent. As my brother has said, the East African countries have been battered. The North Africa and the parts of West Africa have been battered, and it has been a continuous process. And generally, we can say countries in Africa, we have been devastatingly been affected, both politically, economically, and socially. And what is more worrying is that there seems to be no end to it, because all these effects are very, very strong, mm-hmm. and very, very absurd, because the countries, as if they have been turned backwards. Most of these countries which are being affected by this.
I see. Those who have followed and studied this issue of counterterrorism closely point out that traditional counterterrorism approaches with the emphasis on the military may be failing in Africa because, for instance, there's an average of 3 terrorist attacks per day on the continent, and some have called for more holistic solutions with emphasis maybe on development or better governance to curb the scourge of terrorism. Beginning with you, Isaac, how is that view felt in where you are?
Actually, you know, the counterterrorism efforts by many African governments has actually not really succeeded as expected by the populations. Because even if you look at a country like Nigeria, for example, which, like Kenya, has suffered many attacks, given the two terror networks operating in within those two territories, the Boko Haram and the Al-Shabaab. The reactionary efforts have really not paid off, because, like in Kenya, the government reacts more after an attack, after a major attack. You see a lot of strategies being put in place. But after that, then very little is happening. Like, you know, many government installations, for example, in Nairobi, you will experience a lot of security deployment into government territories or other important installations and a lot of serious security patrols in Nairobi streets immediately after an attack. But immediately that subsides, then very little happens. You know, a number of government buildings in Nairobi, like even major malls and supermarkets, crowded places, which are normally targeted by some of these terrorists, will intensify security when there is an attack anywhere in the country, but then they relax shortly after. Mm-hmm. Which means that the counterterrorism strategies by the government is not very effective. You look at Nigeria; they have not even been able to locate most of the girls captured by the Boko Haram attackers. Mm-hmm. So we can say that counterterrorism strategies by African governments is quite ineffective.
I see, Suleiman. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree with my brother. They have been ineffective, they have been haphazard, and unfortunately, the leadership has not sat down to comprehensively tackle the terrorism problem. If you compare with America, immediately after the attack of the homeland, the American passed the Patriot Act. Mm-hmm. To the comprehensive detail, it reinforced the arsenals of tools mm-hmm. which they had for protecting the country, and it was a comprehensive document, a comprehensive guidance to all the stakeholders within the security system. Mm-hmm. So when you compare with Africa, we didn't have such an attempt to have a comprehensive political political examination of what has to be done to be able to, with the combination of the security institutions which we have, to be able to draw out policies which will be able to counter the terrorism, taking into account our own situation on the ground. Mm-hmm. Instead, as the Americans were passing their laws, as the Americans were passing their system, we are copycatting them and then transplanting them to help us, whereas the conditions on the ground are not the same. So as you find, even the capabilities are not the same. And even the Americans themselves, they never helped us to develop our capabilities. You find, as my brother has said, until recently, the American, the Nigerian army did not have the capabilities to fight under the to fight against the Boko Haram in North Africa, in Mali. The Tories almost overran the country. Mm-hmm. They didn't get sufficient help, sufficient technical help to enable them to counter the terrorism. So, as my brother said, the traditional counter-terrorism systems needed to be reinforced, needed to be refined, needed to be looked at from the perspective of the of our African perspective. Mm-hmm. But we didn't do enough homework to be able to counter. As a result, ours has been ongoing, and we have been battered very badly compared to America itself.
Do you think, Suleiman, is this a result of lack of resources or lack of will?
It is a lack of capability. Let's say both. Mm-hmm. One, the will would be there, but we don't have the capability.
I see.
First of all, mm-hmm. the terrorist attack. On in Nairobi and in America came at a time when we have just come out of the Cold War. It came at a time when we are just rebuilding democracy on the continent. It interfered with the growth of democracy and the building of the states. So it came at the time when the states were still very fragile. Many of our states were still very fragile. So the governance systems, instead of solidifying, many of them were co-opted into the anti-terrorism system because the Americans had declared you are either with us or you are with them. Mm-hmm. Some of them which were still very young, and some of them which were still opportunistic, fell on the bandwagon and instead took on the anti-terrorism war and forgot about building the national states themselves. As a result, we did not have, and we still do not have, the capability, the capacity on the ground, and even the will itself is very fragile.
I see. Isaac, I put the same question to you. Take, for instance, in Kenya there, you may even mentioned it in your earlier contribution, how the government reacts after the incident has happened. We saw it at the Westgate Mall. We saw it in Garissa. Is this lack of capability, as Suleiman implies, or lack of resources? Or what is it?
I agree with Suleiman because, you know, I want to put it that this is actually a lack of capability because, you know, the Kenyan government, we have quite a big budget, security budget in Kenya is quite large, and you can say that among the other East African countries, Kenya is capable of actually funding its security systems. But we have a problem of capability, we have a problem of coordination. Like last time, when during the attack on Westgate, it was quite embarrassing because there was serious confusion on who was actually supposed to lead the mission against the attackers at Westgate. So we got the security officers attacking themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was repeated again at the Garissa attack, where now there was quite some... in coordination among the government security agencies. Mm. We had a whole several police choppers ferrying VIPs to the venue, while the Red Squad, an elite squad that is supposed to deal with these attackers, were forced to actually drive all the way from Nairobi to Garissa, which actually also manifests the lack of coordination within the government establishment. And there are a lot of outbursts from within the authorities during Westgate, where the cabinet secretary was saying something else, the military commander saying something else, and the police commander also saying a different thing. So you see, this all point to that lack of coordination among the security agencies in the country.
I see.
Despite the fact that in terms of finances and resources, Kenya is well funded even by other partners like the United States.
I see. Well, let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of how the U.S. anti-terrorism fight affects Africa.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series in Washington. Our topic tonight is how the U.S. anti-terrorism fight affects Africa. Our panelists are Suleiman Mgula, South African-based independent political analyst, and Isaac Onjiri, senior political reporter for the Daily Nation in Nairobi. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Now, gentlemen, there are some confusion among people, because while the war on terrorism usually relates to internationally linked terrorists, Africa faces other security threats of equal or greater significance, posing a question of whether they are fighting the right war or the right classification. For instance, there are several organized rebellions or insurgencies in Africa. While they may not be classified as terrorists, some of them actually do classify them as that. Like in DR Congo, there's Niger Delta in Nigeria, Janjaweed, which was in Darfur, and many others. Is this classification important in that you should identify terrorism as terrorism and insurgencies and the local rebellions as different? Let me begin with Suleiman in South Africa.
That is the biggest problem which the anti-terrorism war has brought. Unfortunately, in the impulsive reaction by the Americans, they were ready to welcome anybody who jumped on the bandwagon of fighting fighting terrorism. In the process, many African governments, which did not have credibility within their own boundaries, used that opportunity to get international legitimacy as leaders. While America and the international community pulled away the eyes from what was happening within the African continent, they solidified themselves, they changed the constitutions, they sharpened the oppressive machinery within those countries. In other words, the clock went back to the dictatorship which existed because America turned the other way around. So as the war on terrorism is intensifying, the internal rebellions, the internal dissatisfaction amongst people are also increasing. So that is why, as you have said, the one mistake which the anti-terrorism war has done was the failure to classify the internal dissatisfaction within a country which are political, and then the external one which are the terrorism one. So some countries, there is no guideline. You find it is all mixed up. For example, let me give one quick example. For example, in Uganda, the American deployed their forces to go and fight Kony. Kony is a political problem. It is not a terrorist problem. That is a purely political problem which was supposed to be sorted out as a political problem for Uganda. But because after the terrorism war had started, there are lots of lobbyists from the Wall Street-like lobbyists, which flooded into Africa, they are pioneering. They are taking all these war on terrorism from their own perspective, not from the perspective of the African countries.
Yeah, Isaac, further to that, even some say in Somalia, for instance, during the reign of the Islamic Courts Union, they had some order of semblance of order, and the Courts Union didn't seem to be bent on spreading terrorism anywhere else, apart from putting order in Somalia. But that, when they were crushed, then that brought in Al-Shabaab, which became a problem to the whole region. Isaac?
Yeah, what I want to say about this is that, you know, the definition of international terrorism is quite clear. But again, there are domestic issues and domestic conflicts which really do not fall within the tenets of international terrorism. You know, like, you know, even in Kenya, constantly we have a number of clan conflicts that also consume quite some life. We have attacks where people are killed, innocent people are killed during clan wars and things like that. This is happening in other countries, like what is happening in Ethiopia between government forces and sometimes the Oromo Liberation Army. And, you know, by the way, Ethiopia is one of the countries that has been able to survive quite a number of times. It hasn't faced massive attacks by international terror groups because of its serious intelligence networks within that country. But when you talk of international terrorism and, you know, the confusion between international terrorism and domestic conflicts that African governments want the world to see as international terrorism, the difference is quite clear if you look at it. That's what I can say. So, you know, we cannot. There's really no confusion between. It is quite clear what is domestic conflict and what is international terrorism.
I see. But then, Isaac, your reaction on the spreading of anti-terrorism laws across the continent that were tailored not only to fight terrorism per se, but even to fight political opposition.
Yeah, that is true, because like in Kenya, you know, some of these laws have been used to create some, to oppress some of the ethnic groups in Kenya. There's a time we saw the government apprehending quite a number of people from the Somali origin and, locking them up at the Kasarani Stadium, you know, on assumption that they could be harboring or working with the terror network, something that was actually, let alone seen as a human rights abuse. This is happening in, you know, areas dominated by the Muslim communities, like the northern Kenya and the coastal Kenya. Mm-hmm. Some African states across Africa, you know, the Muslims have been normally victimized. And this law, the anti-terror laws, passed even in Uganda, has mostly been used to intimidate some African communities in Amana and their leaders. In Kenya, we've seen quite a number of extrajudicial killings targeted at Muslim preachers. So this law, if you ask me, has been abused by some government agencies and states in parts of Africa.
I see. Suleiman, some countries, especially those with strong men, this anti-terrorism law has been a very good weapon to fight their political wars.
In Uganda, the Anti-Terrorism Act of 2002 and also amended in 2015, apart from the title itself, the content and operationalization is basically a domestic issue. It doesn't have anything to do with terrorism. Mm-hmm. The law is being used to suppress opposition against insurgents. Mm-hmm. And the law is so wide, the law is put so wide, it gives a lot of powers to the police and security institution. It is almost keeping the country under state of emergency perpetually.
Mm-hmm.
if you look at it.
Okay.
Then you have got another law, the regulation of interception of communication bill.
Mm-hmm.
That is the regulation of interception of communication. Phones are tapped, any forms of information are tapped, but are the security operatives really concentrating on the terrorists, on the would-be terrorists, or they are concentrating on political opposition? The answer is that they are concentrating on the political opposition. So the absurd part of it is that most of the American diplomats themselves in these dictatorial countries in Africa, they have not been able to advise America to caution these countries or to intervene in this country. Apart from Samantha Powell, who seems to be the only person diplomat in America who knows what is going on in Africa, the rest of the diplomats seem to be in connivance with all these African countries to allow them to oppress their own people and increasing the vulnerability to terrorism instead.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, we have about a minute left. Is it possible, or the biggest challenge that Africa has is to balance combating of terrorism on the continent and fighting against poor governance, poverty, and the deprivation of human rights? How challenging is that task?
Am I starting?
Yeah, you go briefly. We have about 30 seconds, yes.
Okay.
Balancing those two.
You said balancing the
fighting on terrorism and again making sure that you don't impinge on fighting poor governance, poverty, and protection of human rights.
The warning call from the African countries, from the people on the ground, is that the next American president has to go back and re-scrutinize the call, the pledge that they will support all those fighting for good governance, the justice and democracy on the African continent. The terrorism attack pushed their eyes away from that fact. As a result, many dictators on the continent have taken opportunities, massacring as people who are fighting against terrorism. In order for the war on terrorism to succeed, you need strong government. Strong people-led government, not government led by big people, because that is hollow. What they are doing is not towards protecting the country; they are protecting themselves. So the new government in America has to help African countries to go back to the platform of promoting democracy on the continent.
I see, Isaac. We are running out of time, but can you briefly? Is it how in a short answer? Is it possible to balance fighting terrorism as opposed to people who want to fight for economic good governance, fighting poverty, and protecting human rights?
It is possible, but in Africa there are a lot of dynamics that dictate how the governance system works.
Mm.
In the Kenyan situation, for example, you find that the entire security system in the republic is run by probably sometimes one community.
Yes,
that makes it very difficult for them to put an effective intelligence system.
I see.
Capable of nothing, any possibilities of an attack.
I see.
So these are some of the reasons why Kenya really faces a lot of problems, because the Kenyan intelligence system operates like an ethnic committee.
I see.
This is a big issue here.
I see. Well,
this is happening in other countries.
Uganda also the same. Just a tribal thing.
Yes, we are now. Actually, we're out of time,
so
gentlemen.
So is Rwanda. So is Burundi. So is DRC.
We are out of time, gentlemen. That's all the time we had for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel. Suleiman Mugula is South African-based independent political analyst. And thank you, Isaac Onjiri, a senior political reporter for the Daily Nation newspaper in Nairobi. Our producer tonight was Kwame Ofori, and our engineer was the amiable Justin Thwaites. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight, and I'm your host Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best. Stay tuned.